the time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It is Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre, America. Happy Thursday, everybody. Check out some temperatures in the listening area. 49 at Slapout, 50 at Cheyenne, 55 at Hollis, 51 at Weatherford, where I am right now, and 52 at Medford. And I don't have the Texas Mezzanet up on my computer here, but I'll get it up here in just a second. I am broadcasting live today from the Stafford Museum here in at the airport here in Weatherford. Man, what a wonderful! It's actually called the Stafford Air and Space Museum. Sorry, what a wonderful place to have a conference, especially for peanut growers. I'm here just attending the Oklahoma Peanut Expo. It's today. A lot of good speakers so far coming on. I'm going to have Les Crawl for he's the president of the Oklahoma Peanut Board Commission here on. And just after our first break, they just had a break to start eating lunch. So I'm letting them get some chow in them. Also, I'm going to have Scott Shelburne from Canucks and Irrigation on here in just a little bit. They were here with the they're one of the sponsors of the expo today, but it's pretty interesting what's going on here with the peanut crop. They've got numbers from last year's crop they've been providing with everybody, and what variety did what and this and that. We've had two or three doctors from a professor from Georgia in here to speak and talking about, I can tell you, going from here to Georgia is like going from Elk City to Weatherford. That's how much the climate changes. And but there's just a lot of difference in that deal down there. You want to come on already, sir?
Sure.
Grab that mic right there. Headset, not mic, but the headset. Les just showed up. I was just bragging on having the expo here.
Yeah, it is a wonderful venue. If you haven't been to the Stafford Air and Space Museum here in Weatherford, it's they've got stuff, one-of-a-kind stuff that you won't see anywhere. They are a Smithsonian affiliate. They've got some stuff.
Oh, yeah. And I forgot about the new stealth bomber they added.
Yeah, they actually have one of very few stealth bombers on display here. They had to take the secret material off of it,
right,
and recovered out at Burns Flat. They had it out at Clinton Sherman Air Base for a while, you know, to make that happen, because they couldn't display it. It's part of it. It's still top secret, the material,
right,
that makes it vanish from radar.
So I like what you said. You go in there and turn the lights out, and you can't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my dad joke for the day. But it's really cool. This, the whole history of flight, you know, we're sitting here in the lobby underneath the Wright flyer. It's obviously not the original, it's a mock-up of it, but they've got all kinds. They've got an ICBM back there in the back as well.
They do.
Intercontinental ballistic missile. I think they've taken the nuclear warhead off. At least I hope they have.
Oh, yeah, you would hope so. Well, let's talk about the Oklahoma Peanut Expo. It's a real good turnout.
Yeah, good turnout. The primary growing areas in Oklahoma, Caddo County is number one, Beckham County is number two.
Right.
And that's where the vast majority of the peanuts are grown. We had like 17,000 acres last year. We're hoping to have 18,000 this year. But number one and number two counties are Caddo and Beckham County.
Well, according to what we've seen this morning and heard from this morning, what was the report card from last year?
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, as far as our acreage, as far as what we were gross per acre and overall just how the peanut season went last year.
Yeah, we had a really tough year because of everyone remembers the drought we were in last summer and the heat, but we had really good average yields for the state of Oklahoma. I think we were the third highest average yield. It was a little 4,000 pounds per acre last year. So we ended up with a really good crop, good quality, and we hope to repeat that this year.
Right. What was he talking about in there earlier that we've had, I think it was one of the professors from Georgia,
the grading sheet?
The grading sheet,
yeah,
yes.
Dr. Mumford, when you take peanuts into the buying point, they will sample that load. And there's quite a bit of information on that in terms of determining what the farmer is going to pay. How many sound, mature kernels are in that load? And if you thrash them too hard, you'll have loose kernels in there. And loose kernels are not good.
Right.
So that helps determine the grade, and that determines what the farmer is going to be paid for that load. It's a quality issue. You know, the higher the quality, the more they're worth. Certainly, we're always trying to produce a high-quality product, not just because of what we get paid, but because of we're proud of what we do.
Well, exactly. You know, last year was my first year to grow peanuts.
Okay.
And when I got that report from Birdsong, my eyes went crossways.
Yeah. It's like, and people ask me, well, what's your peanuts grade? Well, they were 72. Well, what does that mean? Yeah. And 72 is the percentage of sound, mature kernels in that load, and that's what you're getting paid on. And that was a really good presentation by Dr. Scott Moore.
Yeah, it was.
University of Georgia on how to read and understand the grading sheet. Because there's other stuff in there as well, like foreign matter. Foreign matter, like on in my field, might be some weed carcasses or something like that that got into the final hopper with the peanuts themselves, and then they deduct that off. Obviously, that's of no value, so they don't pay you for foreign matter. But you want to, when you're harvesting your peanuts, you want to keep that as minimal as possible.
As low as possible. And then I was caught off guard when he was showing those charts in there of, you know, their grade. And one year they had like 94% their grade down there in Georgia, like 2016 or something. And just all their grading average overall in their state deal, you know, usually around 72, 74%.
Right.
They had a 94 or 95% in that.
95% of the peanuts grown in Georgia that year graded 72 or above, was, he even said that was an outstanding crop.
Right.
And certainly that can't be expressed. It looked like on normal years, it
30-something.
Well, yeah, the 30 to 70, you know, yeah. I was going to say more in the 70s range, but they had a bad crop there that they didn't grade very well. You're really shooting, apparently, from his presentation to have a 72. You know, as a wheat farmer, growing up as a wheat farmer, I always wanted, you know, grade one wheat, you know, and I knew to do that, I needed to have 60 pounds per bushel wheat. And peanuts, you know, to have grade one peanuts, I guess you need to have 72 or better.
Right. Yeah, it's some interesting stuff. I'm still learning. As you can tell, I don't talk wholly the talk to talk yet, but I'm still got some learning going on out there. But it was but there's some overall deal. Talk about some of the other speakers that came up after him.
Well, Kelly Chamberlain, she's our USDA scientist. She's headquartered out of Stillwater. She talked about variety trials. She does three variety trials. She does one at Hydro, one down at Fort Cobb there by the lake, and then another one down in Tillman County down by the Red River. And she was talking about the variety trials of the different peanuts. There are basically four market types of peanuts. There's the Spanish variety, or red Scythians, we used to call them. Oklahoma was always known for growing Spanish peanuts. Runner peanut, that's the most prevalent grown in the United States. In Georgia, they're all runners. Runners are what they use you know, make peanut butter and stuff like that. And then the ballpark Virginia peanuts, they're the large in-shell product. And then the other one that's kind of new on the scene for Oklahoma is something called a Valencia peanut. That's one that used to be grown out at Portales, New Mexico, but because of environmental changes and water and things like that, they need somewhere to grow them, and they're starting to grow those in Oklahoma. The Valencia peanut, you'll recognize it. It'll have four or five peanuts in a pod, you know, where a Spanish and
kind of looks like a soybean pod.
Yeah, a little bit. I guess I hadn't analogized that, but they're little bitty peanuts, but they're very flavorful. If you for a snack peanut, they are really good. Right. If you can get your hands on Valencia peanuts, and there was a company, Trader Joe's or something like that, that used to have a Valencia peanut butter that was good. I think they're a little sweeter to my
palate. Yeah, they seem like they are to me, too. Last year was the first year some of those guys were trying some of those from those guys out from New Mexico. And, they were pretty sweet.
Yeah, they're a really good snack peanut. We've always used our Spanish peanut for a snack peanut as well. And so they're really good. They're a good option. If you can get some Valencias, they're really good.
The national, there was a representative here now from the National Peanut Board out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I like what I'm seeing, what they're doing with the money that he was talking about, you know, because it seems like they're trying to, besides trade overseas, you know, focus on getting some more customers for American farmer peanuts is, you know, they're focusing on trying to work on the peanut allergy deal.
Well, the domestic market, yeah,
right.
I think he gave a poundage. The average citizen in the United States consumes 7.6
somewhere in there.
Pounds of peanut per year. The National Peanut Board really supports the domestic market. I've been on the National Peanut Board. Currently, the Oklahoma delegate is Mark DeLeon.
Yep.
He's doing a wonderful job, and very proud that he's representing Oklahoma on the National Peanut Board. But they took on the challenge a few years ago about the allergy issue and things like that, because no one wants to grow a crop that harms somebody and things like that. And there were several things that they've done. They have a goal of eradicating peanut allergy, and we now know that we can do that through the early introduction of peanuts to children. Obviously,
you don't
want to give a baby a peanut because it's a choking hazard. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But you know, peanut powder, or take peanut butter and mix it in with some milk or something. You know, there are things you can do that will help early introduction of peanuts, because the allergic reaction that is so deadly is a reaction to that protein that's in the peanut, and you need to have in your body the ability, the enzyme in your stomach really to break that down, and that's what the early introduction does, is gets you started with that. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, because I read some stuff on peanut allergies, and it wasn't nothing put out by the peanut board or anything like that. But, you know, one study they had was talking about some of the younger people never had peanuts until they got in their teens, and then it was hard, or, you know, in their 12, 13, 14 years old, and then it was almost bam, you know, because you're like,
right.
You said, there's a lot of protein in peanuts.
We know, they know from research that an infant that has eczema is more at risk of developing a peanut allergy. Obviously, eczema is a skin rash issue or something like that, but we now know that they're more at risk of being allergic.
Right. Well, Les, thanks for stopping by here, and I'll let you go eat your lunch.
Right, thanks. I enjoyed it.
I'm enjoying the deal, and you guys are, if you ain't never been to a peanut expo, there's peanut butter, there's candy bars with peanuts.
All things peanuts, yes.
Yeah, there's nothing out here but a Dr. Pepper and a bottle of water that doesn't have peanuts in it. So, all right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
You can buy parts anywhere, but the people at our store are different than people at other stores. And if they're not, we're going to make them different. They should be more knowledgeable. They should be more friendly. They should be more customer-oriented. They should be part of the community. We pride ourselves of doing business with people. You can buy parts anywhere. It's the people that make the difference.
We try our best not to tell the customer no, but to find what they need. Napa Auto Parts of Elk City, 716 West 3rd. More parts for more cars.
Save 30 to 40% on Firestone Ag Tires through May 31st. Firestone Ag Tires are 30 to 40% off through May 31. Blair Tire and Feed is helping you get ready for planting season by helping you save money. Here's what you need to know right now. You can save 30 to 40% on Firestone Ag Tires at Blair Tire and Feed until the last day of May. Right now, get the tires you need for planting season and save money. For contact information, Google Blair Tire and Feed. Or just drive to Blair and get your tires.
Every farmer and rancher knows nutrition is key when it comes to getting the best out of every animal. High Pro Feeds has built their reputation on providing the best nutrition possible. Their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. High Pro is a name you know and trust. Buy the best and get the results you deserve. Hobart Farm and Garden is your trusted High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, or sacks. Visit them online at hobartfarmandgarden.com.
It helps to work with someone who's been down the same road you're traveling. Someone who knows what you're up against and what you're going through. When it comes to farmers and ranchers, that's us. That's who we are. Our lenders know ag inside and out because we're producers too. We approach it like a partnership. We want to put ag producers in position to be successful. We're very laid back and easy to deal with. And people seem to like that. We think you'll like it too. I'm Marty Maddox. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend farmers and ranchers a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Are you looking for a new metal building that's built to last? Cyclone Metal Buildings by Culverstone brings you top-tier craftsmanship and second-to-none quality with attention to detail. From luxury custom barn dominiums to shops or barns and commercial buildings, our buildings don't just look good, they're built to last with all custom weld-up, I-beam, and C-Perlin construction. From design to completion, we do it right. That's Cyclone Metal Buildings by Culverstone.
This is the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, March 31st. 1,265 head were sold. 4 head of steers at 430 brought 432.50. 9 at 488 brought 377.50. 7 at 690 brought 307. 68 at 777 brought 291. 26 at 896 brought 270. 28 at 1,004 brought 250. 31 at 1,025 brought 256. 19 head of heifers at 456 brought 360. 3 at 515 brought 332.50. 9 at 684 brought 280. 23 at 744 brought 2630. At 929 brought 239.75. Butcher cows 81 to 158. Butcher bulls brought 154 to 194. 5 pairs brought 2075 to 2750. Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, exit 71, Clinton, Oklahoma. Sale every Monday at 10 a.m. Consigned, call Brandon Hickey, 580-497-6095.
He loves to talk about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back to this. What is today? I almost forgot. Oh, today's the Oklahoma Farm Bureau Day, brought to you by the Roger Mills County Farm Bureau. I didn't forget. I was joshing with you guys. All right, let's check out some weather, some ag weather update out here in the Texas Panhandle. They updated the Mesonet out in Texas. I'm impressed. I can talk about Wheeler now. Wheeler, 24-hour precipitation, zero. Air temperature 54, dew points 42, humidity 66%. And the winds out of the east, southeast at 18 miles an hour. And that's all they got on this one here. So that is your ag weather update. All right, let's see here. I got a special guest, Ashley Ferris. Dr. Ferris from OSU is going to be coming on here in about 8 minutes. So let's check out what happened overnight in our big old world of agriculture. Hey, you guys heard anything on tariffs lately? Wow. Corn, soybean, and wheat futures all plunged in overnight trading after President Donald Trump. What'd he do? What'd he say? Oh, said the U.S. would impose tariffs on several trading partners. The president said in an event at the White House Rose Garden yesterday that the U.S. would put a 54% tariff on all goods imported from China. Bam! In the face. The world's largest buyer of soybeans, which will take effect on April 9th. Tariffs were imposed on many countries, including a 24% levy on goods from Japan, 36% on items from Thailand, and 20% on products from the U.K. My next guest is already in. You're early, but you can sit here and listen to my stuff. How's that? Let's see here. Have you heard anything about tariffs lately? Canadian and Mexican goods will still face 25% tariffs. Trump also announced a 25% rate on all automobile imports into the U.S. that took effect last night. China said it firmly opposes the sweeping duties. Well, I'm sure it will. We're their biggest customer, and we're not their biggest customer. So, vice versa. Canada, Mexico, and China are the U.S.'s largest trading partners. The European Union, which faces 20% levies on its product, is preparing additional tariffs on its own on U.S. products. Bring it on. Corn futures dropped 8 cents to 449 and 3/4 a bushel overnight. Soybean futures for May delivery plunged 21 and a quarter to 10.08 and a quarter a bushel overnight on the Chicago Board of Trade. Soy meal fell 360 to 283.60 a short ton, and soy oil lost 1.13 cents to 7 cents a pound. Sorry, wheat futures for May delivery lost 12 cents to 527 and a half. Or a quarter of a bushel overnight. And then let's see here. What else? Today's ethanol day, but not much change compared to last week. And I don't remember. I'm sure there's been more. But when I checked my radar last night in the U.S., I counted 36 tornado warnings going on from Arkansas up into the Northeast. I don't remember seeing anything like that. And I could be wrong. It's going on again today. We got some rain in western Oklahoma. It was raining when I pulled into Weatherford here. Nice rain in Elk City. When I stopped by the station there this morning about 6:30 or earlier, and I think we got 3 or 4 tenths at the house, according to my neighbor, which is good. We'll take it. But there's another front out there right now getting ready to come through. I think we're going to get some pretty nice rains all over the state the next few days. So keep your fingers crossed and go from there. Let's see here. Let's go ahead and do the Lipscomb Ag Market update. If I can find it. I had it up once. There it is. I see it. The doctor over here going, this guy is really organized. And I don't have a mouse and I'm lost. Okay, here's the current markets right now. May corn, 455 down 2 1/4. July's 463 down 2 1/4. Soybeans for May, 1009 down 20. I think that's the limit. And July's 1024 down, must not be down 20 3/4. Soybean meal, May 288 up 80 cents. Soybean oil, May 4677 up 173. And hard red winter wheat, not too bad compared to this morning. May 569 up 1. July's 580 up 1. And let's see what cotton and the rest of them are doing here. A lot of red on the other side of the board. Yeah, July cotton 65.71 down 3. And now I missed my mouse. Hang on with me. Bear with me, folks. Oil out of West Texas, May 66.55 down 5.16. Natural gas goes up 4.13 for May. The NASDAQ is looking rough, and the S&P is looking rough, and so is the Dow. They're all looking rough today. I bet news stations are talking crap on the president today, if I was guessing right. Live cattle, April 208.15 down 2.22, June 204.57 down 2.82. Feeders, April 285.07 down 3.80, May 383.10 down 4.82. Lean hogs, April 87.60, actually up 15. All right, we're going to take a Oklahoma Farm Bureau break, brought to you by the Roger Mills County Farm Bureau. And when I come back, I'm sorry, this is my nickname for it. Professor Ashley Ferris is going to be on here. She has a professional name that she went to college 20 years to get, but I call her the Bug Lady. So we're going to be right back after this.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Kent Watkins here with SEI Agritech in Elk City. It's time to gear up for corn planting season. Our Golden Harvest brand corn seed is now available, so call today and get your order in. Don't miss out on the best yields at the lowest possible price. Also, if you're needing bigger amounts of ag chemicals, we can ship it to you straight from the warehouse. And remember, you can't beat our prices. That's SEI Agritech, your partner in productivity. Visit us today on South Randall in Elk City. Follow us on Facebook or give us a call.
The biggest mistake I've seen when people are purchasing insurance or coming in to visit with us is being underinsured. You know, the state minimum on auto insurance is $25,000, $50,000, and that's too low. I mean, if you run into somebody's new vehicle and it costs $50,000 and you only have $25,000 in coverage, that's going to come out of your pocket. So, you know, we try to make sure that our customers are insured how they need to be to get the coverage. I mean, if you're going to have insurance, you need to have it for the right reasons, and that's to protect themselves. I mean, that's why they have it. I'm really in the business of protecting the customer. When it comes to protection, it's not a large amount more to go ahead and get the coverage you need.
Life insurance and annuity products offered through Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company. Property and casualty products are offered through Oklahoma Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance and affiliated companies.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lively. I'm an insurance agent with Oklahoma Farm Bureau. My office is located in Greer County. Call me anytime at 580-782-3827.
My mom used to take me to the local dairy when I was a little girl, and I always was interested in learning where my food came from. I didn't grow up on a farm. I'm from the city, but please don't hold that against me. We owned a farm in Colorado and again here in western Oklahoma. My name's Becky Brown, and my husband's name's Tony Tummins, and together we own BT Butchers, a mobile meat processor. We bring our trailers to you. Your place or our place processed your way. Please find us at B as in Becky, T as in Tony, butchers.com. That's btbutchers.com. We would love to help you feed your family. The short wait list and two-day turnaround means we move pretty fast, and since we come to you, it really is convenient. Not bad for a girl from the city. We would love to help you feed your family.
A bolt breaks on a spring tooth, a harrow, or a chisel. Your work in the field stops. Most people have two choices. Either use baling wire as a temporary fix, or drive 15 miles into town. There's a third option that'll get you back to work in only a few minutes. We'll bring a bolt bin to your place, and we'll keep it stocked for you. Camrock Supply. It's on South Main in Elk City next to Fred's Steakhouse. The website is camrocksupply.com. Staying supplied keeps you in the field, getting your work done.
I open new accounts, CDs, IRAs, help our customers with online banking, order debit cards, anything that has to do with checking accounts, savings accounts, opening those up for new customers or helping our existing customers with any issues or things that they might have with an account. They want customer service. They want someone to just know who they are, and they want someone that they can trust. I'm Tori Ashpaw, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust at Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
Now, back to more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Okay, welcome back. Here is your ag weather update for northwestern Oklahoma. Alva, 53 degrees, a little bit of rain. Well, it says 0.01. That ain't enough to talk about. 47 is the dew point, humidity 79. Southeast winds 15 with wind gusts up 20. Bare soil temperature 59 degrees and chance of rain 50% today, 59 for a high. Tonight 44, 70% chance of rain. And tomorrow, rain showers, 90% chance of rain showers tomorrow with a high around 60 with northeast winds 6 to 13 miles an hour. All right, one of my favorite people from OSU. I hope she's not offended when I call her the bug lady. Are you offended?
I'm not offended. I'm used to it. One time I had somebody tell me, well, you don't look like a bug girl. And I was like, well, I think that's probably a good thing, but I don't know what a bug girl would look like. So I'm okay not looking
that
like
wasn't
one, but
Cotton
I am
King,
one.
Was it?
No, it was not. This was back home in Texas, so no.
And we figured out, with your last name being Farish, you're not kin to none of them either.
No, well, not that I know of, but there's a common misspelling. I'm a 1R Farish, and I'm proud of it. So.
Oh, yeah. So, anyway, thanks for coming on. Everybody, this is Ashley Farish. Say your title again.
I'm the cropping systems entomologist, and I'm also the integrated pest management coordinator for the state.
Right, so, yes. That's the one that I forgot about. Mm-hmm. And your hubby, he's a powerful person too at OSU.
He likes to think so. No, I'm just kidding. He is the livestock extension entomologist.
Right.
So, yes. So, yes. We've got the cattle and we've got the crops covered from all the bugs.
Right. Yes. You got it. So, have you heard any rumors from your hubby that you could share with us? Is there any, because I'm the Asian tick.
Asian longhorn tick.
Yes.
So he actually is right now in the process of putting together a survey on different ticks for extension purposes of what are ticks that people can recognize that they're seeing on their different animals. Also, you know, testing and seeing if what people are saying that they think it is actually is what it is.
Right.
And that kind of information is really going to be helpful for his extension programming, for any kind of research that can also come out of it from Oklahoma State. And I know that we have our veterinary program. They're also working on looking and doing research on the Asian longhorn tick, too,
based
on what they've seen. So we've got these two different efforts going. One of them, so my husband, he's not part of animal science. He often gets lumped into that. People just think that's where he is. He's in the entomology and plant pathology program, our department. And so he's leading that part of it. He is joining us in efforts with the vet school on some of the information as well. And then the vet school has their own research that's going on. It's largely a research study, but they're trying to pull in some producers to get some information from them as well.
And because late last year when I talked to Dr. Roslyn
Biggs.
Mm-hmm. I want to say Bragg.
So yes, Roslyn's running that other one. Yes,
she's taking it serious.
Yes, yeah, it is. It is scary if you think about something so small that can carry enough of a pathogen load that can do that much harm or actually kill one cow. Like that's pretty impressive and also very scary. And detrimental. So yes, being aware of what we have going on in our system is going to be really important for protecting it.
Right. And this gift. Tell hubby I said hello.
I will do that. I'll have to
tell him if he really wants to find some ticks, go shoot a deer.
Oh, yeah. No, and we've got some impressive bucks in our yard, actually, out in Glencoe. So, yeah. It's kind of a surprise. So, yeah.
So, are you a hunter?
I'm from a family of hunters. I have an appreciation for it, but I don't think I should be doing it in my own backyard, is what I would say.
Right.
I want to see it done. I want to see it as an actual sport, not as a matter of convenience. That's kind of my.
I got you.
Sorry, I'm not trying to upset anybody, but that's just my. That's
no,
just my
no,
piece, so.
you're not going to upset anybody.
Okay.
You won't upset because there is that out there. You know, there is one in my backyard, but my backyard 400 acres.
No. See, that's very different than you're like saying, like, oh, look at this thing that I come and feed every single day. You know, oh, look, it's here for me. And I'm like, that's not really hunting.
Well, you got to see the deer damage to my peanuts last year.
Yes. And so talking to our colleagues that are here in Georgia for the peanut expo, the deer, if we think they're bad here, they're even worse in Georgia with their peanuts. They just move down from plant to plant down that field, and they're just taking them out. They've got pictures of anywhere between 150 to 300 deer in a peanut field, just mowing it down. And when I've gone to conferences and seen their presentations, they're largely trying to figure out how do they mitigate this issue of not an insect, but instead a four-legged mammal, you know, of not plowing through all of their peanuts.
Well, and it's an issue in certain parts of, especially around peanut country in Oklahoma and the rivers and stuff, because of where the irrigation is, stuff's always green.
Yep.
There's plenty to eat.
Very
and
much.
And the hogs and the deer,
mm-hmm.
the coons, the coyotes, everything likes it.
Yes.
But that, and then you get with the wildlife department, which I'm a big buddy with,
mm-hmm.
and they're caught in the middle there is deer is a game animal.
Yes.
It's not a nuisance like a hog or a coyote.
Correct.
And they got a...
That was balance. You've got to keep
you gotta
in mind.
You got a balance, but then you got these... Farmers, well, I'll use me for an example. I've got 200-some acres of wheat ground there, and I can only graze about 20 or 30% of it because the deer keep the rest of it ate down, mm-hmm. so I don't get to take advantage of it. I'm not the only one.
Yes.
And I cannot afford to put a hive fence around my place,
nope.
and I don't want to.
So we have a family property out in the Texas Hill Country, the true Texas Hill
Country. Oh, yeah, I've been there. Yep.
And so, yes, that was a big thing is we had neighbors that were putting in high gain fences. We saw how it was kind of impacting our area. And, you know, even though if you put those cutouts in there where they can run through and stuff, that's going to find them all the time. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we finally had to make the decision to protect and keep what we've got in our area and also maintain our population because we do lease that area as well to hunters. Then we need to do something like that. But then we've also got people that have abandoned their wild game ranches around us when they hit bankruptcy, and we're like, what the heck is that doing on our place? So it's interesting, you know?
They
so
got hungry.
We've got some interesting things that have showed up, and we've had to call and, you know, have somebody to come out and remove that thing for us. So, yeah. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about bugs.
Six-legged things. Yeah, so I guess things that I've got going on right now, we're here at the Peanut Expo, so I'll start with that first, is I'll have a miticide trial in peanuts that'll be happening this summer, and so I'm going to be placing that out at Fort Cobb. I'm going to be looking at about 10 different products that have different modes of action and different active ingredients to kind of see how that works on mites and peanuts. So I know that we irrigate our peanut acres, so maybe thinking, well, mites aren't going to be such an issue for that. The problem is when we do actually spray, looking back at some information, it looks like we're only spraying one thing. We know that two spotted spider mites are something that already show resistance to different types of chemical compounds. So my thought is, why not go ahead and let our producers know, hey, there's other tools and other options out here, so we're not contributing to additional resistance when we have these issues in the future? Because mites are also not going to only stay in peanuts. They're going to be in wheat. They're going to be in other crops as well, too. So if we're lending to that resistance in one system, when we have all these connected systems, we could be lending to resistance in other places.
Yeah,
we don't want to start that.
Yes.
So it's
keep
kind
me
of
up on that because
yes.
I got a bunch of tomato plants I just planted yesterday in the high tunnel.
I was wondering if you were going to be doing that again. So, yeah.
I got 90 in the ground yesterday.
Man.
I'm not even a third done.
Nope, that's a lot.
Yeah, because the same stuff that works on peanuts, fungicides, pesticides, stuff for mites, because mites are a big thing in everything.
Yes.
And it all works together.
Right. Yeah, and we just want to be sure that we're being good stewards of the chemical that we have available to us because we are also seeing how we're losing out on different kind of chemicals based on decisions that are being handed down through legal systems and the EPA. And so if we can protect what we have, I think that's going to be really important so that we can keep using those tools in the future. It's getting more and more expensive to discover and to get labels for and patents for these new chemistries. So we need to be sure we keep what we've got available.
So last year when you guys were on your way to Fort Cobb to the peanut deal down there,
mm-hmm.
you guys stopped at a cornfield, didn't you?
Yes. So we had been stopping at cornfields. Yeah, so I will say August of last year is the first time that we have actually confirmed that we had the corn leafhopper in corn. And so from that moment on, we focused our efforts. That was about at Grady in Pottawatomie County. So we then moved northward to see where else is this insect possibly. Basically, every cornfield we went into, we found the insect. Depending on when that insect had gotten there, because it can vector multiple pathogens that cause corn stunt, and how long it had been between the insect being there and then actually symptoms showing up, it can take anywhere between 21 to 28 days, depending on the pathogens, for those symptoms to show up.
Okay.
So you may think, okay, I've got the insect, but I don't have the disease just yet. Probably have the disease, unfortunately.
You just can't see
they're
it.
Such efficient vector, so there's no economic threshold for this pest. A lot of us, Texas included, and then this thing was found all the way up through to New York in some different counties, it really was causing some issues. So for this coming year, we do have a monitoring system out. We've been in close communication with Texas and finding out, okay, what do they have there? For us in Oklahoma, we haven't seen this pest since December. And so that's the good news. If we're going to be having it, it's likely going to be something that we acquire by movement coming up out of the coastal bend, or rather really the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, move up to us. So there's different ways that we're going to be keeping people alerted. You can sign up for Oklahoma State University Pest E-Alert. That's how we're going to send out information. Texas A&M, they also have their own information that they're sharing out too. So they released a audio file yesterday that actually said they found one corn leafhopper on a trap in the central Texas area, so around the Brazos Valley River bottom. So
it's not far from here.
It's not that far, but also it was only one. So we need to just, be cautious, be aware of what's going on. We're talking to our producers. We're doing some trials to see what is some efficacy of some products. Issue is, because it hasn't been a problem in the U.S., it hasn't been a continual problem in the U.S., we don't have any resistant hybrids available to us on the U.S. market, so we do need to think about chemical control options. So we also need to be careful about not spraying something just like a pyrethroid that could possibly, yes, it's inexpensive, don't know how long that residual is, probably going to be on the lower end, but also could contribute to, you know, flaring up spider mites. You don't want to create another issue, you know, kind of bringing that to it. So this summer, I'll be testing about 12 different products this summer, doing some in-furrow and some foliar applications, depending on if we get that test here in Oklahoma. So I've got different locations that I'll put the trial up at, and then we can see the data from there. But we're keeping everybody up to date on what we're seeing when we see it, letting our producers know what they can do to prepare.
And how do they check on that again?
So for that, you're going to want to go out into your field. I use a little handheld vacuum for our early-stage corn. It sounds really silly.
What stage?
So we're talking about anything from emergence when you're really going to want to start checking. But if you don't have an alert that it's in your area, maybe wait a little bit. But up through about V3 will protect if you've got just your basic seed treatment on it right now.
And that's
now.
About that tall,
and
am I right?
It's about up to like your mid-calf is what I would say. Right. So then whenever you get after the V3 stage, you want to protect it through the V8 stage. And then the reason for that is if you can get your corn to the V8 stage and you don't have that pathogen and that insect there, the corn is going to outrun the symptoms at that point.
Yeah, when it goes.
Yes, exactly. So you don't have to worry about it so much. Now, the hard part is that V3 to V8, I get questions of, well, if I do see it, how many applications am I going to have to do? And that's what these trials are for this summer. We just don't know the efficacy, the frequency, what you're going to have to spray. But if you think about it, it's not like a pyrethroid, you're probably going to have to make multiple applications.
Until you get to that.
Yeah,
stage.
But that's a hard investment, you know.
Yes.
So it's because a lot of times corn's not something that we intensively manage or we intensively put a lot of input into because it's not one of those crops that we baby, you know, and understandably
right.
So, especially when we're thinking about market values that you were listing
right.
earlier, too.
Yeah.
But some other options are things like dimethylate, something that could be used. I know I've had some people talk to me about, well, should I tank mix? As IPM coordinator, I'm supposed to promote good IPM practices. I can't promote that you tank mix and add some things when you're going across with that herbicide treatment about 3 weeks, you know, after you have emergence if you don't see an insect. If you see that insect in there, if you see that corn leafhopper, then go ahead. Now, this insect is very, very small. We've got some pest alerts. I put one out, I want to say, back at the end of January, beginning of February, that talked about how you can go scouting for this insect, what this insect looks like. Also other kinds of management considerations too. So I would say go check out that. And I
Where's
even,
that at?
That's going to be if you just Google Oklahoma State University pest alert or
right.
leafhopper, you'll see two of them that I've written that pop up. Those three.
I got
has
two neighbors planting some corn right now.
All right. Okay.
One's already in the ground and the other one's getting ready too.
Okay. So I may talk to you about, we're looking for more sites to monitor. We're not wanting to go overkill on this, but we are putting out traps in the areas. With this corn, we're putting out yellow sticky cards. It's another way that you can be monitoring for the pest. Again, this leafhopper is very, very, very small. It can be confused for a lot of other leafhoppers. So we're also wanting to make sure that identifications are being done right. So if you think that you found one, let me know, and I'm happy to go out to your field and see, hey, do you have it or do you not, so that we can make sure that we're making management decisions that actually need to happen for that true pest.
Are you listening, Dave or Miller? She knows the way to my house. No, Casey's got his on the other side of the river over towards Hex,
mm-hmm.
and then Millers are putting their pivot in there right by my place. But, you know, David, I think he's an agronomist that worked for the USDA,
uh-huh.
So he knows people and he studies this stuff.
Yeah.
But he kind of told me about it last winter, just exactly the way you said. It's, you start seeing it right here,
mm-hmm.
and then I think it was V8 stage or whatever, you know, and then that's when that corn just goes crazy.
Yes, yeah. So if we can get it to that point, and not have an infestation, then you're in really good shape.
Because it hits him.
I was going to say, so it's interesting. At first we thought, okay, probably mostly impacting our later planted corn. And this makes sense if you think about it logically of probably hit later planted corn harder because you already had a population that got there with when it got there and was able to reproduce on the full season corn. But it was just a ready population to move into the younger corn. And so it was earlier to get attacked by those pathogens and that insect.
And then that's
when you really saw the symptoms.
Yep.
But I say that, but I've also talked to some producers where I've seen some data from them, ones that keep really excellent records, and we know it wasn't other environmental stressors that caused the symptoms, where we did see last year some full-season corn that actually were severely impacted by corn stunt.
Okay.
Losses of anywhere between 10 to 55% is what we were seeing attributed to that. So it kind of changes the idea of, and I've talked to my colleague in Texas, I'm like, that kind of changes our idea of the timeline that we thought this was happening, you know? And so we're still trying to kind of piece together what made all of this come together for last year.
Well, late season corn not planted until late June and early July.
Correct. So,
it's the neighborhood.
It was already there, easily move over and into. So this insect only reproduces in corn. We were scouting for it in other green habitats over the winter to see if it was actually going to survive. It looks like temperatures took care of it for us, in addition to drought also took care of it for us, in the sense that from what I observed, this is also just 1 year of me looking at, you know, I've only been here just about a year.
Yeah.
But it looked to me like alfalfa dormancy wasn't, you know, it went dormant, so that wasn't really green and attractive for it to stay in, because it's not going to pass those pathogens to it. Instead, what it's going to do is it's just going to be taking kind of like a drink of water, basically, from that green material to be able to survive throughout the season where we don't have corn. They're not going to reproduce in it, so it's going to be whatever population's there. You know that females that are infected with those pathogens have a better chance of overwintering, so they have improved overwintering ability, which basically means they can survive a little bit longer at those colder temperatures. But the minimum critical temperature for this insect is 23 degrees Fahrenheit, and it needs to be at that for 8 hours or more based on previous literature.
And then when
I looked at that, I was like, okay, that didn't really happen for us until January. You know,
yes,
so
because we had a very warm late fall.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, and so I went back through the hourly Mesonet data and the places where we were kind of tracking and trapping these insects and looking for them when the numbers dropped off. And really what I saw is they dropped off sooner than when we reached those temperatures. And that was largely, I think, because the earlier freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit and a little bit below took care of a lot of that green material that was available out there. Wheat was also planted later because we had about anywhere between 6 to 8 inches in a lot of places in the state in November out of nowhere.
Where? Yep.
And I looked at all the average rainfall over the last 15 years from the Mesonet data too. And so we were below rainfall all the way from, like, below average from August all the way through January, except for in the month of November last year, the different locations we were doing our trapping at. So,
kind
of like trying to tie in these different things and think about it. That's what is going on with the corn leaf hopper world. We're just trying to keep everybody aware of what's going on, and then we'll share information as we get it.
Well, yeah, because I could see on my neighbor's corn what it did, and it wasn't good.
Yeah.
It's sad.
It is sad. So the symptoms, if you want to talk about symptoms and stuff sometimes, then you should have Dr. Dusick on here to talk about it.
I will.
Yes, I think she'd be really good to talk about.
Cool.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Well, you and I gabbed a little while.
I know, I'm sorry.
No, it was good. Everybody, do you go by doctor, professor?
So you can just call me Ashley. It's totally fine. So unless you're one of my siblings, then yes, Dr. Ferris. So.
Well, Dr. Ashley Ferris, who I call the bug lady, And everybody, I'm sorry, she knows who the cotton king is.
I was going to say, I wanted to say, Jimmy, I do have some cotton research going on and some soybean stuff as well with stink bug evaluations. I've got a graduate student working on that, looking at do we need to refine those a little bit. But we can set up a time to talk about that more.
I think I need to have you on probably in May. And get an update on everything?
If we're not on planters at that time, then yes, I will do that.
Where?
I said if we're not on planters at that time, then I will do that. But no, I think we can set up a time.
No, sometime in May.
Yeah.
Because actually, I ought to have you come on at least every month or every other month, because what you're doing is really important to every crop, everything. And because number one enemy is the bugs.
Yeah, I know. That's true. That is very true.
You know, and there's good bugs and bad bugs, yeah. And we got to be careful what we're doing.
Correct.
So.
Yeah, we want to keep the good ones around too. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to take a Oklahoma Farm Bureau break, brought to you by the Roger Mills County Farm Bureau. We'll be right back after this.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
From pump to pivot, Valley Water Experts can provide efficient turnkey pumping solutions for large or small operations. From identifying a source to remote management, Valley Water Experts have you covered with the most efficient and cost-effective solutions for all your water management challenges. Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325, or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com. That's Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325, or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
We go down to Midland. We've had some crews up in North Dakota that we've had to take stuff up there too, down in Longview, Texas. Like all the big oil field companies that we have, they usually call and say, hey, we need this, or our salesman, they'll go by once, twice a month, and they'll see what they need. Hey, you need some of this, this, and this. You need 100 gallons more oil. We set big tanks, bulk tanks, you know, whatever size you want, 250 to 330 gallon tanks for oil for the mechanic shops to service all the equipment. Whatever you need, call an order in, and we get it out to you as quick as possible. Oh, it's very convenient. You walk in, see what you want right there. If not, tell us what you want. If we don't have it, we'll find it and get it for you, and we're going to be very competitive on price. We'll probably beat anybody's price around here. Camrock is the name of the company. It's 2111 South Main, Elk City, south of Fred's Steakhouse. I'm Ronnie Redd. Myself, Brock Kalk, and Casey Miller are your owners at Camrock. Three local guys just looking to do business with our community.
As a farmer or rancher, you're always looking for ways to save time and money. The Apache Hay Wagon from Everett's Welding in Visalia, Oklahoma will help you do just that. The Apache Hay Wagon eliminates 80 to 90% of hay waste with its unique design. It hauls multiple bales, saving you time and money. Go by Everett's Welding today and ask to see the Apache Hay Wagon. You'll be glad you did. You can also visit them online at everettswelding.com.
The 2025 Hemp Hill County Beef Cattle Conference in Canadian, Texas is celebrating 10 big years, providing prime opportunities to learn, network, and socialize with producers from around the country. Get your tickets today for the conference, Tuesday and Wednesday, April 29th and 30th. Just Google Hemp Hill Beef Cattle Conference, go to the website, see the agenda, speakers, sponsors, and get your tickets today. See you in Canadian.
Southwest Overhead Door has provided sales, service, and installation of garage doors to Western Oklahoma and the East Texas Panhandle since 1980. If you're in the market for a new overhead door for your home or business, let Southwest Overhead Door show you their selection of quality CHI overhead doors by visiting 1000 South Merritt Road in Elk City, or visit them online at swdoorelkcity.com. A CHI overhead door professionally installed by Southwest Overhead Door provides beauty and value to your home or business.
Get ready for an upcoming land auction on Thursday, April 10th at 10 a.m. United Country Buford Resources Real Estate and Auction, in partnership with Russ Real Estate and Land Sales, are offering two prime Oklahoma properties at auction. 360 acres in Greer County with exceptional hunting and grazing land, and a 160-acre productive stock farm in Kiowa County. This is premium Oklahoma land you won't want to miss. Location is Western Technology Center in Hobart. For details and terms, visit BufordResources.com or 405-833-9499. That's Thursday, April 10th at 10 a.m.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
See here. All right, I'm back. Sorry about that. Hey, here is your Knutson. I'm sorry. Here's your Mangum irrigation. They're bothering me. Now I got it. Okay, here's your Hope Farm and Garden Ag weather update for southwestern Oklahoma. Mangum, 53 degrees, dew points 46, humidity 76. These guys are messing with me bad here. The wind's out of the east, northeast at 13, 3-day average 4-inch bare soil temperature, 63 degrees, 8/10 of rain today. Heard from a buddy of mine at Willows, they had 48 100s this morning.
Sunset at 8 o'clock, and today, 60% chance of rain showers, 59, 46 tonight, 90% chance of rain showers, and tomorrow, 62 in rain showers and 80% chance of rain. I want to thank everybody that came in here and sit down and talk with me on the show today. So I guess we'll see you guys coming up and tomorrow. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Thayer, Oklahoma. God bless.
Oh, come on. This is fun. Riding is fun. This is nice. KEZO.